¿Qué onda, primos?
Primas.
Y primes.
Welcome to my...
My primos.
My primos.
My...
Primo.
Podcast.
My name is Freddy.
My name is Kevin Garcia.
My name is Elia Maria Madrid.
Well, this is Chikuma, whenever I can make it.
My Primos Podcast discusses all things fandom and pop culture.
From comic books.
Movies.
To whatever obsession we have this week.
But with a Latine...
Latine...
My Latine...
perspective. Remember, we're all primos.
We're all primes.
We're all primos.
No matter what part of the world we're from.
Podcast.
Hello.
Hi.
Wait, where am I?
you are directly in the center.
Wait, so I don't even
you're
in the center. Know.
You can look either way and it works. Right?
Let's see. Okay, there we go. I will do this. Hello.
Yeah.
There we go.
There we go. Let's see. It's just funny if you would say like Freddy, but you're looking at Kevin, you know? Kevin. You said Freddy.
That would be on fucked purpose. Up and hilarious.
You just do it on sorry. Purpose. Just be like, oh, I just can't remember, you know. These people.
I'm a ditzy dame.
No, you're not a ditzy dame. You're so big. You know, you're so out there. You're out there with the stars looking down on us.
No, a lot of people talk about my assets, and sometimes I feel minimal in comparison to them.
Depends how big the assets are.
It's like Dolly said.
Nice.
I may be
Dolly.
Because like Dolly said, I'm also a great pair of legs.
¿Qué ondas, primos y primas en primes? Of course, it has to be you. You have to step on it.
Well, look, Elia wasn't here. Someone had to say something.
I guess. Fine. For the spirit of Elia. Here we go. ¿Qué ondas, primos, primas y primes? And welcome back to my Primos Podcast. With me tonight is my primo and yours, Mr. Kevin Garcia.com. Say what's up, Kevin.
What's up, Kevin?
One day,
no,
one
mom,
day, that's
way.
Just gonna stop. One day is gonna stop. One day is gonna stop. But you know what? The people want it. They expect it. You can't let your crowd down, right? Speaking of people pleasing and crowds, and people are excited. We're excited to have and very pleased to have with us tonight, Miss Veronique Medrano. Say what's up, Veronique.
Pew 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 pew. Puro pinche nervios a la verga.
Woo! There you go. Puro party. Puro pinche party. My wife bought your shirt at a con. She wears a piñata one. Just puro pinche party.
Oh my god,
party.
I love it.
Wait, what are these shirts? I don't think I've seen your shirts.
Yes.
Oh man.
Oh my god, that's an entire conversation we're going to have about
okay, merchandise. Have
definitely, definitely. But primo, yes. Before we dive into the conversations and the chaos and the just, trust me, we started talking and then we didn't hit record. So this is like a second recording now, guys. So we'll see if it goes the same way or
don't
not.
Reveal the but secrets behind the curtain.
That's what it is, man. I mean, it's the shoestring budget.
It removes the illusion.
I mean, I'm not in a studio. I'm literally like in an empty den with like, next
look,
to a set of rims and an ironing board.
You're in a studio.
It's a curtain because I can't afford a fourth wall. This is a curtain.
Don't acknowledge the fourth wall. We've covered that.
Mira,
that's what I do here,
this
man.
Is my
keep it real,
now.
Almost.
That's what
gets She-Hulk in trouble.
She's in charge.
I am the captain now. This is my podcast.
Toss her the keys. Toss her the keys. There we go. Primos, but of course, housekeeping. You can follow us on our socials at My Primos Podcast. And of course, MyPrimosPodcast.com, where we have all our shows, our reviews, our posts, and any wackiness we get on the website. And of course, you can follow Mr. Kevin Garcia _com. Let's get him to those 10K on that TikTok. And
getting there.
Veronique 956.
See,
follow her.
That's all about showing where you're from. I love that. Whenever I even mention like the valley in TikTok, always at least one comment. 956. And you know what? Yes.
This is the thing. I'm from California, as you can tell, my LA, my swag. But when you tell me, oh, I grew up in the valley, I'm like, oh, why? It's so hot and weird in the San Gabriel Valley. Like I'm thinking LA. I'm like, you're in the valley? Oh.
Oh
but
my
when
god!
When I went to Texas,
that
I know,
story.
Bro,
entirely different, valley.
Whole different
no,
thing.
Not just that, but the more I've gone to LA, the more that particular conundrum has actually occurred to me now. Before, couldn't have cared less about how I said things. Now I have to say deep South Texas, and there's a reason for that too. There is a reason for that particular wording too.
Yeah, no, seriously. I can't tell you how many times I'll meet somebody from like San Antonio and they're like, yeah, I'm in South Texas. You are not in South Texas, San Antonio. I'm sorry. Like at least Corpus Christi and below, at least.
There's a reason for that, which we will get into. But the biggest reason for that is obviously it's just historical. Mm-hmm. You know, like it is because the border used to end right around San Antonio. So Mexico owned from like around San Antonio, like under San Antonio down.
That only lasted a couple of years though, like less than 5 years.
I mean, my God, how long was Mexico not part of the US? So like, that's how people like engaged with Texas until, you know, the Mexican-American War. And then
I'm so sore about that, by the way.
We all are. Our asses still hurt to this day. But you know, like when you get into that, it then pushed the border down to Brownsville, down to these areas and why it looks the way it does. And so when people say South Texas, I kind of forgive them now because the mentality is still from a lot of generational understanding from a lot of Anglo families that that is South Texas because that technically was where it was. Now I have to clarify deep South Texas because then they go, like it automatically changes the conversation and it's no longer, oh, hey, you know, I'm talking about Texas. Now it's like, oh, there's something further if she's saying deep South Texas. And then there's it immediately changes the conversation. I'm telling you, it does.
But my thing is, I look at a map and in the center of the map, like not like the geographic, not like the what's the word I'm looking for, not geographical, not the mathematical center, I guess, but like there's a mass, right? In the center of the mass, you got San Antonio and Austin. Like it's you can't get much more center Texas than that.
Yeah, but you have to think about people who are coming from the Midwest, who are coming from the West, who are coming from the East Coast, and their definition of where the north of Texas starts is the panhandle, the northest part of the state. And then by the time they get to the middle, they think that's south. And then from that point on, they don't want to go any further south.
Well, you know what? Honestly, whenever I talk, you talk about white people from the north. Whenever I talk to somebody, a white person who's not been farther south than San Antonio, they always say the same thing. They're like, oh, you're from Brownsville? Is your family safe? Are they okay?
Whoa.
And I'm like, sometimes the first couple times that happened, I answered it seriously. I was like, oh, yeah, they're doing fine. Thanks. And then I was like, wait, hold on. Are you saying because of the immigration crisis or are you saying because of the drug war? Like, which one of the things do you think is killing people? Because it's not really in Brownsville, either of it. You know,
I will confirm and deny both of these things.
Well, no, it's tangential too. Like I know people in Brownsville that used to go to Mexico all the time just to get tacos and people don't want to go anymore, but like, it's not,
I'll go with you, Kevin, but come down, let's go. I have my passport. I just got it.
I have my passport too, but it's not a war zone that people seem to think it is.
No, it's not. And you know, this is supposed to be a nerdy podcast, and this is what you guys got. This is what you get.
This is nerdy. This is the vegetable. Geographical nerdiness.
This is the vegetables before the dessert. So enjoy yourselves now.
It's soup to nuts, everybody. We're at the soup. Okay, we're at the soup.
We're at the soup.
We're at the soup. Wait till we get to the nuts. That's always the best part.
Bro, where do you go eat that there's soup and then they give you nuts?
You don't know that phrase? Oh, sorry. Isn't for the
bars?
No.
You never had? Okay, so traditionally when you had a like 7-course meal, you start off with the soup, right, course. You work your way down to the dessert, which usually included a nut, some type of pecan or almond or
that just sounds fruity. Dirty, sir.
So anyway, let's gatekeep Freddie out of this. Go on, Veronica. Continue.
Why are you calling her Veronica, bro?
I said Veronica. Veronique. I said Veronica. I stuttered, but I said Veronica.
I'm the one you're going to be here. No,
mom and dad, no fight.
Okay. Point is, when I moved to Texas, people were telling me,
stay together for Veronica.
I'm from LA. It's true. For Veronique, we'll stay together. But when I moved to Texas from LA, it was like, oh, I'm in Dallas. And they're like, hey, you're in Central Texas. I'm like, on the map, it doesn't look like it's Central Texas. Because I'm like an hour away from fucking Oklahoma.
I've been like, corrected several times that Dallas is not Central Texas or North Texas.
See, this is where I once again state, for anyone outside of the state, they straight up include the panhandle as north and then just move down. And once
you mean that fucking garrote looking thing at the top of Texas?
Yep, that's what they count. Think about it. Think about just how dumb that is.
But is it like, isn't it like this? Like Texas is a gun?
Yes.
This part?
Okay. Yes.
There you go. Yeah, Texas is a gun.
Texas is a gun.
Yeah, Texas is a gun.
Put that on a shirt. I've been told.
Welcome to Texas. And it's like this, it's a gun. And I was like, okay. There we go, Texas. No, but, I get the idea of being knowing. So, of course, right now, living here for so long, when they tell me, oh, I live in the valley, I immediately, my brain goes, oh, we're in Texas. Remember, we're in Texas. That's way down there. Mm-hmm. And then you said yourself, I've never.
Look,
every time I tell people, oh, I'm going to go to El Paso or I'm going to go down that part of town, they're like, why? There's no reason to go there. What is that mentality?
Why? So that mentality comes from a place like Kevin was talking about earlier. There, like a lot of us remember back in the 90s and 2000s. Don't get me wrong. There was horrible things that were going on. There was a drug war, just like there is one in the United States.
Yeah.
All of those things exist. But like, here's the thing is that like for us, it takes on a different tone, because I will agree with people. 2008, 2009, 2010, those were some gnarly years. That's when we finally got to see what was on the news.
Yeah.
That's when our border communities started to feel it, because and to the point that it felt it to such an extent that there was a quick turnaround from the governments on both sides to figure it out, because it was affecting tourism. And so just imagine 3 years. And like, here's a very good example. And I'm going to be honest, that shit happened and it was crazy. Let me preface this story with that. It happened. It's crazy. But then it suddenly never happened again. Here's why. Because I was at school. So, UTB, or what was formerly UTB, now it is UTRGB. If you look it up, it is literally smack dab on top of the border. So like the border wall's here, all of these folks are here. Here's the university. Just, this is where they are. This is where the university is. They're next door neighbors.
Literally, people who don't know, the University of Texas that's down there is literally on the border. I used to teach at the high school that's about a quarter mile from the border. But literally the property, to the point, by the way, that when Bush was building his fence across Texas, the original plan was to build around the university golf course, which was hilarious because that would mean only the Border Patrol would be allowed to go golfing. After a lot of
planning, I was thinking, like, hold on, like,
only the Border Patrol. It was an entire fight. Go look it up. It was an entire ass.
Yeah, I worked for the newspaper at the time. I remember writing about it several times. It was hilarious.
It's funny. So he worked for the newspaper, and then I eventually worked for that same newspaper. So funny. Again, like, whoa. The circles are really small in the valley, because it's literally an hour worth of like at least 4, 5, or 6 towns. I'm going to probably mess up towns. But yeah, like, it just is what it is. But like, I was at school and I was working as for one of like the programs that the university was doing for other kids. Okay. So I was a student employee. That's the best way to describe it. I know it was not a TA position. I was not teaching anyone anything. So I was doing that. And in the middle of class, we just hear sirens going off all across the building. And then they're pushing us in from one side of the building all the way to the other, where there's no windows, where you can't see shit. We're stuck there for about an hour. Nobody's talking. Then you start hearing the noise in the midst of this hour. Like, the moment that things are moving really fast, a bunch of noises, you're like, what the fuck is going on? And then boom, you're in a room and then you hear it. And like, hearing gunfire, hearing shit like that is already traumatic enough. But then when you realize that your car is in the parking lot and at least like a dozen or so cars that were out there, from students to teachers to people working, had gotten shot up from spillover gunfire that was happening in the midst of this like gang wars that was going on. And that's when it hit us. But let me be clear. It happened three different times in the set of a few weeks. Dozen or so times. I will tell you, suddenly it stopped happening when an entire ass, what do they call those things? Tanks.
Yeah.
A whole ass tank moved through town.
A U.S. tank, I'm assuming.
A U.S. tank moving through town to the border, pointed.
Wow.
And we were like.
Can I just say that when they recently had that situation where those three college kids from the U.S. were kidnapped and one of them died. And they released them back to the cartel, released them immediately as soon as it became news. And then they tied up one of their members, dropped them off at the police station and said, it's his fault. He's the one that did it. And my only thought was, they're just like, oh, we don't want to poke that bear. We don't want to wake up the U.S. again.
And it's because of that. Like, there was a lot of show of force. Like, it wasn't publicized in the news. Let me be clear. It's really hilarious what gets publicized in the news and what doesn't. Yeah. And the stuff that gets publicized is the stuff that is super theatrical.
And when you say publicized, you mean nationwide?
Yeah, nationwide.
Yeah, because there were so many things that I remember covering that I'm like, why is this not nationwide news? And it wasn't, because they didn't care about us.
No. And it was crazy. So for those who like, unfortunately, those times which did exist in the 2000s.
Yeah. The aughts. I like to say the aughts.
The aughts. Thank you. The aughts.
Why do you get so offended, man? It is what it is. It's 20 years ago. Huh?
No, I love saying the aughts because 2000s is technically a whole century, but aughts makes you feel older.
No, I got you. But the aughts. So for those who are unaware, like the narrative of the Valley got tainted so bad because of that particular era in time that was happening everywhere. And it's been politicized enough. And I'm sure this is not a political podcast, but again, for those who are like, hey, let me know where you're from. No, there is no danger in where I'm from. I'm perfectly fine. It is not a war zone. It is not a third world country.
Exactly.
I've had folks from Dallas.
Well, even that marketing agencies. Is problematic.
Yeah, even like, again, it is problematic, but it's like they treat us like we are a third world country war zone when we are none of those things. And we are literally within the United States.
So like, while we've been talking about this, I brought up a map and I want to kind of show this, kind of shift gears a little bit. This is a map that basically shows Texas as seen by Texans. You know what I mean? We talk about Deep South Texas. It's what's here, the lower Rio Grande Valley. Technically, the Rio Grande Valley goes all the way to El Paso, but like the lower Rio Grande Valley, that's what we're really talking about. And when people say South Texas, yeah, I generally agree with that being South Texas, except it shouldn't include San Antonio. I don't believe that. But that being said, San Antonio can't be hill country because it's really not hill country, you know? And so that makes sense. And then, you know, it breaks it all down. And I think for a lot of people, it's becoming a political podcast. For a lot of people who are all worried about the border crisis, none of them live near the border.
None of them. And
literally.
And I will just, you know what? This is a great segue. I'm going to be super honest. The inadvertently was a great segue for the comic that we'll be releasing in March,
which called, I learned about.
Called Dragon Thrall. It is
from Chispa Comics.
From Chispa Comics.
It which is we've 13. Had.
The 13 Origins, the 13. Dragon Thrall.
Well, tell us about it. What's the book about, Veronique?
So, the 13 Origins, Dragon Thrall, I just want to let everybody know, it is my first comic book out for consumption. It is the first one I have written, one of many that are coming out over the next few years. So don't think that this is just a one and done for me. I'm in the industry. You can't take me out now. And so... The story itself is about a dreamer, somebody who is a migrant dreamer kid, and their experience, dealing with immigration, dealing with just these unfortunate situations that happen, and how it leads quite accidentally to her getting powers from the fireworm. And so all of this is just drenched in deep lore. But to top it all off, I get the wonderful privilege of having my words being illustrated by Steph C. She is an amazing illustrator from Mexico. And to be able to just continue with my full ethos and pathos of trying to be authentically present with my personhood and the personhood of my characters who are Mexicanos as much as I possibly can. And so the story does take place in Tequila, Jalisco, and it is just such a beautiful story. I really cannot commend Steph enough. Like, she has made art out of what is one girl's very, very small dream of being, you know, in somebody's stacks with a little piece of tape on the back of the book. Like,
yeah, in somebody's short box, right?
Yeah, I'm in somebody's short box.
It looks really, really good. I've seen the preview art. I'm very excited about it.
Like,
I've seen the cover and a couple previews. It looks really good too. Definitely.
I think the beautiful part about the story itself is that I was able to really encapsulate Mexico. And while there are different stories that happen around the U.S., I made it a challenge for myself to try to capture, you know, the other side of the border. Mm-hmm. Because it's not something that even in comics is very much done. You know, when we think of comic books about Mexico, there is that sepia-ness to it all. Yes. Unfortunately, there's this very Western vibe, and this does not give that. This is definitely a celebration of color and sound and just, wow. I really cannot commend Steph C enough. There is a reason why the woman is booked and busy with Marvel and DC and with these companies. And I get to usher words. I get to usher words into the world, and she gets to make them beautiful. And like I said, I just really want to shout her out, because if you guys don't know who she is, really, really great artist. And she's not here today, but I just really want to commend her for
with
that.
With us in spirit.
She's with us truly in Dragon Thrall spirit. But I really love the book. I had to get pulled back from some of the crazy shit I wanted to do because I had to remember this was a YA book. But
speaking of the craziness of the book, you wrote Dragon Thrall. I've written Coneja, which is not coming out until October. And the plan after that is to have Terry Blas do the follow-up series.
Yeah.
And Terry kept saying, watching you and I
duke it out in the
verbally duke it out, I guess. Verbally, yeah, we were metaphorically at each other's throats, but in a fun way, in good spirit. When we were at an event, he's like, I'm gonna make sure Dragon Thrall and Coneja like Coneja's constantly being annoying, but not on purpose. And I'm like, you know what? That feels accurate.
That feels super accurate. And here's the thing, is like I think there's a bit of, you know, For those who know Kevin in this podcast, you do not know Kevin like I know Kevin. And I know Kevin in a way locally, that maybe you guys don't understand his impact for a little small town on the border.
Oh, look at Kevin. Sit up there, man. Get a little chest out there, Kevin. Do it.
All right. I mean, like,
maybe it'll need just make fill you up a little bit.
I don't take compliments well. Like, I talk a lot. But it's very hard for me to like internalize it. I'm like, okay, sure. They're saying that sarcastically. Okay, cool. I can take it sarcastically.
He's kind of blushing, right? I don't even like, kind of see it.
He is. Like,
right?
He stopped speaking.
That's it. When he stops speaking, that's the tell. Kevin Garcia.
But here's the thing is that Kevin, you know, we come from a very small town that's literally on the border. And to try to represent where you're from is not an easy task. I can attest, and I'm sure Kevin can attest too. You know, when you feel insular, mm-hmm. Creatively within a community that doesn't really support it, or an environment that doesn't really support it, it makes it really hard to be a creative. I was very blessed. I say this all the time. I'm super blessed that my parents gave me the name that they gave me and knew the type of person I would become. because nice. No one gives a name like Veronique to somebody in a border town community where almost everyone speaks Spanish without knowing that it would create something, you know, it would just be pressure for a diamond. And I was blessed with some very creatively supportive parents who are creatives themselves in their own little fun ways. And, you know, to have that made a different person. But, you know, I look at Kevin and I look at, you know, he was doing things 10 times before me because, you know, he's older than me. No, but it's just like you were working at the newspaper before I worked there. You know, so many different things that like our paths are always crossing. And, you know, I remember like, and this is what's crazy. It's the full circle moment of it all is I remember Kevin and me at our local comic book shop. And then to see us together as comic book writers, him as, you know, somebody who is very well established and well respected within the community, especially with Marvel Comics, especially with comic book history. And then myself being a first time writer, bro, it's everybody's dream to like come up with your comic book friends. Like it is everybody's dream. And so I get to live that dream every flipping day. And that's why I say, for those of you who do not understand why it is important that Kevins exist, the Kevin in your life, literally Kevins exist because there is a Kevin in your life, your friend who is at the comic book shop, who loves and is so passionate about this medium, that they could be the next writer. And they could remember you and they could remember that support. And so that's why I'm taking this time to just give everybody.
Man, go grab a beer right now and like to Kevin Garcia, everybody.
Kevin Garcia.
You know, crack one for Kevin Garcia _.com.
See, while you are gushing here, my first thought is to deflect and say, hey, you have a Freddie Fender record behind you. Talk about local pride.
Love Freddie Fender. I mean, Freddie. Every Freddie, man, stands out. Well,
Freddie Fender was a hit back in the day from San Benito. And so the water tower says the home of Freddie Fender.
Yep. And we've
been involved in a lot of recently. I mean, I follow your feed online, and you have been helping petition to get Freddie Fender into the Country Music Hall of Fame, correct?
Yes. And again,
we talk about Freddie Fender.
Yeah.
Freddie Fender. We're coming up on the 50th anniversary of the timeless classic record Before the Next Teardrop Falls. And I have been petitioning for the last 2 years to get him inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame. And a lot of people will be like, what, isn't he already in there already? No, he's not. I know, because I do the research. And he is truly the first Mexican-American who really encapsulated being a migrant, who really encapsulated being Mexicano and American, and really just proudly being from South Texas and sharing that culture with the world. And my God, he had a number one record. The record that you guys see behind me is Freddie Fender's record that he recorded while he was in jail. This is not highly in print. We're actually trying to find out more about the story behind this record because it was recorded inside the Louisiana State Prison.
Honestly, I didn't know that about that record.
Yeah, it was quietly released in 1975. In the midst of the success of Before the Next Teardrop Falls.
Yeah. So I remember finding a record store in LA because I'm a music geek and I love Freddie Fender because it was always like, oh, Freddie, I'm Freddie. Which is Freddie Fender guy? Who's Freddie Mercury guy? You know, yeah, like,
you got
like,
to work with Freddie. They're good at music.
Good at music. There you go. But Ready for Freddie. I had that record. Like, I actually had the vinyl, Ready for Freddie. And that was my thing for a while. Like, are you ready for Freddie? Because I got it from that record. And people were like, where did you get that from? And I'm like, in South Central LA, listening to, you know, Freddie Fender, or listening to Winona Jackson, or listening to just like this old country, all this stuff coming up. And it's amazing. You know, for those that don't know, Veronique singer, performer as well. And definitely love your record, by the way. I told you that. I love your music. Bum 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 is dope. I was playing it earlier. I love the fact that you're passionate, you know, about la cultura, comunidad, and the fact that even with the music and writing and just in yourself. I mean, when I met you, we just hit it off. It was great. I mean, it was a blast, but I feel like whenever you have passion, oh yeah, you're strong, Brad. You're a wrestler. You were wrestling that day too. I remember.
You know what? I had blocked that out for a quick second. My brother was a massive fan of Strong Bad, and you had that down, even down to the voice. So, yeah.
What's funny is I try to do the voice outside of the mask now, and I can't.
It's not the same.
It's not the same.
No, like, you got to put the mask on.
You know what's
one,
funny?
One, I have to put the mask on. Number two, I was talking with a bunch of the wrestlers afterwards because I said, bro, I feel like I'm hyperventilating in here. And they were like, yeah, bruh, like, look at the nose holes. They're super small. You're going to die in there.
So I remember watching footage of Jim Hansen, and he's trying to do the Kermit voice, and he couldn't do it. And then he lifted up Kermit, and suddenly he could do it. And that's what it comes down to. You have to
You have to wear the mask. You have to wear the mask.
Oh, my God. The fact that you brought up a Kermit reference. Oh, my God. Love Jim Henson.
Everybody should. A very complex
human being, but overall, truly a consummate artist, a consummate creator, somebody that is just like.
Had a dream and believed in it.
Yeah. There's a few people that like I go, my God, like if I could have a career like, you know, Robin Williams, if I could have a career like Jim Henson, if I could have a career that would make me timeless for people. Mm-hmm. I think I've done everything I need to do.
So what you're saying is you need to have the career of Veronique Medrano.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, if you have to be.
I definitely
release a record, release a kid's book, release a comic book, yes. Release a merch line.
Everything.
You have to go on tour. You have to be with the CMT channel.
I know,
right?
You have
to be at the Music Awards.
I'm going to have Grammys. Freddie and Kevin, the Primos podcast is going on the road.
Hey, let's do it. Let's go. Get theaters going, man. We're telling you, Elia and me have been talking about doing events. Can make it happen, Veronique. Trust me.
You.
But let's talk about that. You haven't really kind of, and I love this conversation, not to derail it, right? But with music, let's talk about that. I mean, kind of, I want you to flex a little bit and brag, you know, like your music career and, you know, how you came about it. I mean, yeah, the name helps, right? Veronique. And
it's very,
you're right. It's weird. Very, very, very unique. People, somebody told me once, oh, what is this? Oh, it's Veronique. Like, oh, I would have said, Veronique. And I was like, no, it's Veronique. It's unique. Veronique. You get it? They're like, oh, okay. But she's Latina, right? And I go, yeah, it's just Veronique. Very, very unique. But let's jump in. Let's talk about your music and kind of tell us how that came about and your project you currently have out. Definitely, definitely. You guys got to check it out. It's really good.
So with my music, I recently released my first fully like co-produced record. So I had a lot of decision making. This was the first time that I could flex my ear in making decisions on how things sounded sonically with another producer. That was freaking great, but it was very, very challenging because when making this record, which is called Mexi Americana, I had to kind of really decide, did I want to finally stretch my bilingual legs and create music that was both in English, in Spanish, and in both languages in one song and take the risk and go out there and do it in Tejano, well, actually in Tex-Mex country, which is a mix of Tejano and country music. And honestly, it was the best decision I ever made for myself. It has opened up creatively a lot of the doors in my brain on how I engage and interact. But furthermore, you know, I have had the true blessing that even though I released it towards the end of the year, that people are still talking about it coming into 2024. You know, I just got a review by Ed Helms of The Office and Hangover fame. And he runs a bluegrass company that now is expanding into country. And he remembered my music to the point that he went and looked at the rest of my discography and, you know, recommended my music and said that it was, you know, Tejano coming back to country music. And that is an honor beyond words, you know, being on Billboard and getting reviewed by Billboard, getting reviewed by all Ed Helms, getting reviewed by, you know, every big country publication and then national music publications. Again, I don't think that like the me that thought, you know, when I was little and living in a border town that I would jet out of here, go to New York, be a Broadway star. ¿Quién me creo? Pero, you know, thinking all of that, and that at the end of the day, you know, I get the beautiful blessing of being here, being home, being around family, and then being able to be myself authentically no matter where I go. I'm really glad that I started my career after my 20s. Or within my 20s, instead of, you know, trying to go for it when I was young. Like a lot of us thought, we were in the 90s. Everybody thought they were going to be the next kid star. Everybody thought they were going to be Macaulay Culkin or Britney Spears. Right. Or, you know, they were going to be that. But there's only one of them for a reason. And so, you know, my music, my musical journey has definitely been one of a lot of self-exploration. I have 4 albums out now, 4 fully fleshed out albums, 2 EPs, and we're working on a 5th record. Yeah, you heard me right. We just released one at the end of last year. We're already working on the next.
What you're saying is you're taking it slow.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I'm just a leisurely pace, you know. Just gotta get the blood pumping. Gotta get the lungs working, you know.
I mean, it's like, when do you ever have like a dinner and just have a day off and relax? It feels like you don't.
I don't. But I know that there's a reason for it. I've been grinding for about 10 years. And what's a few more? I know where I'm at. Like where I'm at now and compared to where I was when I first started, oh, totally different. Like I was working a full-time job. I mean, shoot, even before the pandemic, I was doing a full 40-hour week job. A full-time course load for a master's degree, full-time, mm-hmm. not part-time, full-time as if I did not have a job. So think of how many classes that is for anybody that's curious what that might be. And then I think that's like 4, right, Kevin? Like 3 or 4? So 3 or 4.
You're asking numbers to an English teacher. Numbers are not my thing.
But a master's degree is like 3 or 4 classes, which are like ridiculous hours.
So the other thing is I got my bachelor's in 7 years, but in my defense, I got 2 bachelors out of it. But then it was another 9 years for my master's. So I'm not the one to talk about what the standard is.
Look, just cut Kevin's time in half.
There you
just
go.
Think of how many numbers that is. And that's a lot. So I'm doing 40 hours a week on that full-time course load as if I don't have a job with my master's program and then working my music career full-time, which is as soon as I get off work and as soon as I'm done with classes, guess what I'm doing? Scheduling stuff, going into production, songwriting. Like I have lived that life. I live that life now a lot less stressfully. And so to me, I've moved from the grind to now just being able to creating comfortably. And that is a luxury that I grinded for. So before anyone tells me, you're being lazy. No, I'm not. I'm absolutely not. Like Freddie said, you know, I think for me, there is no break because I can already see where my trajectory is that I want to get to so that I can kind of start building things for the next one. And now it's like every plateau point is some nice steady stuff because one of the things that they don't tell you about the growth of being an artist is that you need to start to understand the rhythms of how things move. Because you are going, once you figure it out, you're going to really love when it's not moving so fast. And you're going to really be creating your best within those times because otherwise everyone's going to expect you to be at 100 at all times. And the only times you don't get to be is as soon as you close the door to the hotel room and you take off your clothes and you go to bed. That is the only time that you get to be you. And you have to be okay with that. Sometimes the struggle is worth the price. because then you get to do what you want.
But in that hotel room, you have free time. You could be recording podcasts. You could be setting up. Yeah,
it's too much extra work. I'm dead ass.
Too much free time is what it is.
No,
I really 100% agree with you. I know exactly how that feels, not to the same level, but like I've never had only one job. I've always done multiple things. I take it back. There are very few times where I've had only one job, and I felt like something's missing because I'm always writing for one thing or working for another thing, and then teaching, and then also freelancing over here. It's always something.
That is a cat, and that is our break.
I need to get my cat because she woke up.
Meow. Meow. Meow.
After that chaotic first half of the show, thanks, Kevin Garcia. You're out of control.
Well, I mean,
man.
Look, whenever praising me comes up, it's gonna take over. It's gonna take
over. Mike literally died because we were praising Kevin Garcia so much. It was like, shut up.
Two mics went out.
Kevin's
two
show.
Two different mics went out.
Mike.
In two cities.
In two mics in two different cities. In the deep south of Texas and up here in central Texas.
Whatever. I don't even know anymore. I think I'm not in the hill country, so.
But Primos, you just listened to Veronique herself with Bam Bam Bam. I've been jamming that song recently when I walk the dog. I do have a doggo now, Max.
And I'm now following Veronique on Spotify because I can't believe I wasn't already. Like I thought I had
loser.
Been. I know.
Loser.
I know.
Can't do that, man. You got to follow everybody. Everybody in this family.
No. I have to follow everybody. I have to follow everybody who's good. And a prima.
Whoa.
There we go.
Tread lightly. She just praised you so much. She blew you up. Be careful. Be careful. Be careful. Look at her. Look at her. It's crazy. It's crazy. She's strong. She's bad. Strong.
So we've been talking this whole... about like the culture and the traditions of South Texas. We've been talking about the regions of Texas. We're talking about the struggle of being a bilingual musician, trying to make our way, I'm not a musician, make your way in the industry. And
yeah, Kevin's all I could think this whole time
was throughout my entire childhood and into the early 90s was like, when I was a teenager, they were like, Selena is going to be the one to break it. Selena is going to be the one to just break it wide open. And at the time they were comparing her to Madonna, but I think that would have been kind of small compared to how big she had gotten so quickly. And
did you know, Kevin, that there was a documentary just recently released?
So I watched this documentary.
What
specifically
are you guys
because
about?
Hold I on, heard hold on, talk I about
think,
it.
No, no, no. Hold what on, are you guys on, talking about? What is this documentary that you speak
okay, so
of?
Hold on, Monique. Hold on. Sit down. Or you're already
like,
sitting.
Is it like, did Netflix up? Put out like a new show that has Brownsville Mountains in it? Like, I need to know.
All right.
They find it. That's a documentary?
Oh, my God. That,
the hills of Brownsville.
Oh, my God. There was this HBO movie back in the 90s called Second Civil War. And literally, they're like, I'm in Brownsville, Texas. And there's mountains behind them. I'm like, where the hell is that?
I mean, that's what I
is
thought.
Is that the documentary we're talking about? We're talking about them finally, like putting to rest.
You may want to take a beat.
Okay.
And just brace yourself a little bit.
Okay.
But the murderer of Selena.
Yeah.
Who?
Yolanda is the main topic of an Oxygen Channel documentary, where
is
she spends
the new,
about.
Wait. Is she like the new the new person on the Bad Girls Club? Like what? Like what's
I
happening?
I mean,
Bad Girls Club.
I'm a fan of Bad Girls Club.
Yolanda,
I think it's
like
Scared Straight Yolanda. You know, you
scared
don't know.
Straight
like,
Yolanda.
You know,
yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Is that what
I mean,
you
be careful. You know, she's gonna shoot you. But she is trying to convince the general public because it's next year in March.
Yeah, next year
she is up for parole. And she is trying to convince us
that she
it was an accident.
Selena?
Well,
it was an accident. Oh, so like, all, what?
No, but here's the thing, though. Everybody who's been talking to me about this has been saying it as if she's already been paroled. And I'm like, no, she'd be up for parole next year. So there's no guarantee. Now, is it likely that she's paroled? I mean,
no,
I
would say probably. But I'm going to tell you right now, like, one of the biggest things with parolees is that they have to show some kind of remorse to start with.
True.
And I'm going to tell you this. Whoever thought that the timing was correct, I'm sorry. Yolanda is not Gypsy Rose. I don't know what people were thinking. Did they think that, like, it was like, oh no, I killed for a reason, bro? Gypsy Rose and Yolanda, not the same people. Number one.
So
number two,
if you haven't watched it, let me give you the bird's eye view of it, and we can tear it apart. Because Kevin sat through it. I sat through both episodes,
I chose not to. Why? Because
I didn't know that was an option.
Well, I can choose not to because I'm the guest.
You know what? You know what? Fair. That is fair. All right, Freddie.
So let's give Elia Maria, because Elia was not able to be in the show. She watched it and she straight up like, nothing she said validates what she did. Guilty. Catch my hands. March 31st, 2025. Like, that's Elia's response.
Elia said, I love the documentary and everything. No, she did not say that.
Don't you dare.
I told her I would say that.
Come on here and drag your ass.
She will literally jump on screen right now and choke you.
She'll jump you.
She's going to find you. There you go. See? There you go.
Told you, the spirit, her spirit lives in us.
It's through me. Catch his hands. But point is, she's trying to convince you that it's an accident. And you know my opinion right now, when I watch this thing, all I did was get more pissed off, annoyed at her family, because her family was sitting there going, woe is me. Like, oh man, it's just my aunt, and people were treating me bad because of what she did. And even though it was an accident, and all these things led up to her accidentally having the gun go off and killing Selena. And she says that at the end of the documentary, it went off. I was trying to commit suicide, and then she ran away and the gun went poof and killed her. But there was nothing in that whole 4 hours of my life that showed remorse, that showed that she took full responsibility for it. And they were trying to plead the case. And Kevin, you both were for newspapers, so you know the objective.
Before we break down the meaning of what this all means, I want to keep addressing the documentary itself for a quick second.
Let's go.
And what I want to say is, I've been in journalism now for 25 years. This year, I've been a professional writer, right? This is bald-faced, as much as it can be, one-sided storytelling. And admittedly, they are trying to say, oh, here's a side that isn't heard before. Fair. But that being said, it is nothing else about it is fair. You know, everything about this is like, look how suspicious her father is, who was nowhere near the site and had nothing to do with the actual incident, but he's suspicious nonetheless, you know? And by the way, I cannot look at him and not see Edward James Olmos. But the thing is that, like, it's just so, it reminded me of the Firefest documentaries, right? Because if you guys remember, there were two Firefest documentaries that came out the same, like, month, I think, right? Mm-hmm. And one of them interviewed the people who were, like, there, who live and work there, and one of them interviewed the guy that put it on, and the one that interviewed the guy that put it on was like, everybody but me was guilty. And if you watch the other video, it was like, it was all him, you know. So it was like, it was ridiculous, because it was funny to me watching both documentaries. Like to me, watching one without the other was pointless, because they were so hilarious against each other. And in this one, it is 100% Yolanda is not innocent, but she's a victim as well. And that by itself is like, no, we need, if you aren't going to get the family of Selena involved, then at least have somebody give a retrospective on Selena as you're talking about it. Not just, by the way, she was popular, you know? Like,
dude, not only that, don't hold on. I mean, Veronique, please chime in here in a second, but this piece fucked me up more. They were trying to, like, almost drag her name through the mud at the end of it. They were trying to make her seem like she was also doing dirty shit.
Literally, a quote from Yolanda, she was human too. She was also flawed.
I mean, yeah, but we don't need you to tell us that, bitch.
Thank you, like, for speaking for all of us. Real.
Like, bitch, yeah. The fuck you think? Like, living in a very harsh, like, let's just wrap our minds around, you know, the person that is Selena. And I would like to just outright say, I understand that there's a lot of flack to this one person who got interviewed, and I have his book here. This one. It's called Selena.
Como la I've been wondering about that.
Joe Nick Potowski.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it, but here's the thing, is that with people who write stuff like this, that initially was not sanctioned by the Quintanillas, but after they read it, left this man alone. Joe Nick Potowski is not a nobody. He is a very well-respected journalist with the Texas Monthly, covered everything about Selena as she was getting big within the state, and, you know, was writing about her, did extensive research. I have actually had the blessing of going through his archives, which anyone can go and check out, by the way.
He's an actual journalist.
Yes, he is an actual factual journalist. He has written the biography for Willie Nelson, sanctioned by Willie Nelson. So, like, he is not somebody that is throwing shit around. And
he's,
so
if you look at his on that archives, show, I was like, why is this guy on here?
So the reason why is because he's probably one of the only few people who would actually do the interview, to be very honest. They probably tried reaching out to chingos of historians, and a bunch of people told them to fuck off. And they had to try a different tact to get information from someone. I don't know for a fact.
So,
but yeah.
Yes. So here's the problem with him being on there. And I don't know this from him, but I know this from other people that I know that have been on documentaries before. And they're like, yeah, I did like an hour of interview with them. And they used the 5 minutes where I was like, well, maybe it was a fake assassination, you know, that kind of stuff. Like not about this situation, obviously.
Well, let's not pretend, right? We understand. Documentary.
Because I didn't watch it. What did you guys get from his?
So from him was 90%. You know, especially the beginning of it, the actual, like, here's why Selena was so important. But then whenever they were trying to cut together clips, they'd be like, but maybe Yolanda's, like, sympathetic. There'd be him saying, well, it's very clear we don't have the whole story. And it's like, you know, there was more to that conversation, but they just cut him saying that little bit.
So I want everyone to just give the dude a break.
Oh, yeah. No, please, I 100% agree.
Please read this book.
I know too many people that have been, but give us the full title of the book again, by the way.
So the full title, I'm actually going to pop off this sleeve because it's a very pretty sleeve, but it does not help. So the book is called Selena Como la Flor by Joe Nick Potowski. And it is a beautiful book that really, and I say beautiful in the sense of that it does a really good job of encapsulating the time period in which she was coming up, with a lot of just historical facts, just things that actually happened, the record deals they signed, the things that were going on that were publicized, you know, that they followed.
Yeah.
Because there was archives of what she was doing from a very young age, the dad was doing when he was opening the restaurant, all of these things that are facts that he was able to, you know, put together so that people can better understand what was happening. On top of the fact that if you really want to understand the breadth of his research when putting together this book, you can go to the Whitliff Collections at Texas State University in San Marcos and ask for or ask to look at the Joe Nick Potowski archives, because he donated interviews with Laura Canales, interviews with some of the biggest stars that some who have passed on, others, which was at a very particular point in time when he was doing these interviews for this particular book. So you can kind of understand where he comes from, because it just really sucks that unfortunately he just kind of got caught in a spot where it's I'm a historian. I'm assuming other historians are getting called for this.
I'm assuming you're going to use more of my words.
Yeah, I'm assuming the fact that they used him as a character, like, for historical purposes at the beginning makes so much sense. Because, again, it comes from a dude who did the research. Is it cool that it was a bolillo? No. But in regards to the archiving and preservation and historian space, there are more gringos and more white people who represent our culture than ourselves, because either they want us to have a degree. So they have the goalpost, and the goalpost is, okay, we want you to have a degree. Well, you have to have experience talking about these things for XYZ. Okay, you have to have a dissertation. And like, they're going to make a whole bunch
body of
different
work,
well, it's not just that, but one thing that's, I think, important to understand is that until the past, let's say 10 years, until the past like 10 years or so, it was not uncommon, and they wouldn't say why it is, that they would pick the white names first to put things up. And so the idea of having white historians looking into people of color, hey, it was important that somebody was keeping track of it. Nowadays, especially in the past 10 years, that's really flipped 100%. And it's become a lot more like, why are you having a white person cover this? Why not have somebody from that culture cover it? But like, that was not a discussion in the 90s. That was not even a discussion in the early 2000s, in the aughts. It wasn't a discussion. It should have been. Don't get me wrong.
Look at the demographic for Oxygen. Look at the fucking demographic for Oxygen. It is those girls that you know who are murder mystery fanatics.
Yep.
Who, you know, that's who they're catering to. So why would they put a brown face in front of them talking about history? I'm going to tell you right now, they were probably having a hard time as it is trying to find a brown historian to begin with. To back that up.
Remember, like, one thing to keep in mind, when I was in film school, we had a whole thing about documentaries, right? I love documentary film. But the one thing we talked about was, like, you guys know, even news stories, documentaries, whatever it is, they skew a certain way. You're the one that directs that story, right? Period. And this one here was literally, like you said, feeding into that need of, like, ooh, there's something dark and hidden here. No, bitch, it's just fucking, she killed her. Like, there's no need to go any further.
Like, when they said, oh my God, she's going to tell us some untold secrets. Oh my God, is she going to tell us that she shot Selena? No, bitch, we already knew that. Like, why did... Here's the thing, for anyone who is worried...
Check this out. Tell me, come on. How blatant, right? We're all writers here. We're all creatives here. We understand how things, reality TV, everything gets kind of maneuvered and controlled, right? Mm-hmm. There is a scene that as soon as it happened... my skin crawled and I was like, oh, this is disgusting. Because there's a scene where it's like the nieces and the nephew, my mic thing fell, get that professional here. They're at the table with paperwork, stacks of paperwork, like they're investigating. They're like, oh my God, what's this? A red envelope comes out and it goes, Selena's secret or the doctor's secret. I forget what the fuck it said. It literally said, Selena's secret or the doctor's secret on it, a red envelope. What is this? Do you think this is the secret that Yolanda has? And they go, oh my God. And they open it up and I'm like, oh my God. They open it like, it's like a little, I want to say like postage stamp size, little fold out card that says, con mucho amor de tu amigo, doctor, whatever the fuck. And oh, well, I wouldn't say amor to a friend, but is this the secret?
Bro, have you not met a Mexican in your whole ass life who speaks Spanish all the time?
My wife were like, what the fuck are we watching? And she's like,
you make your wife watch this?
It is una pinche telenovela.
Ella empezó, and I got sucked in.
Don't lower telenovelas by comparing them to this.
To watch it. I had to pay for Peacock to watch it. I was like, I have to pay for this? And she's like, yes, pay for it. I was like, fuck. All right, here we go.
I want you all to understand this bitch is not getting out. That family has attorneys upon attorneys upon attorneys who are going to literally go to the parole board. They know how to structure, because at the end of the day, a parole hearing or a hearing to get parole is truly like, this is so fucking wild for this podcast. This went everywhere. It went from border politics to now the law. So I am a philosophy of law student.
And there you go, everybody.
Hey, everybody needs to be
that lady right there. Veronique, you want a content? You got it.
Every I'm not a lawyer. Person, please do not hire me.
Every single person has told me that if by some miracle she does get paroled, she needs to change her name, get facial reconstruction surgery, and move to Europe. That's like
she was crying that they were worried about poisoning her, and her family was worried about being poisoned at taco places. We would go to Mexican restaurants.
Bitch, I hope you get food poisoning 2 times a week.
We would be scared to go to a Mexican restaurant because people were like, maybe they're going to poison us. And I was like, oh, shut the fuck up. Nobody knows who you are.
I mean, really, this is the thing that the family has really made a point. I think they thought they were doing something. I think that they thought that they were doing something because look at what happened with Gypsy Rose. And, you know, you have this narrative of, and again, totally different circumstances.
Yeah.
Totally different circumstances. But you have like this this rehabilitation of a murderer and the image of a murderer. And, you know,
that one everybody knew from the beginning should not have been what it was.
Yes, but it was still murder. So yeah, like, no, still- it was straight up still murder, but there's so much.
Yeah.
It was
it's a murder.
Her mom's dead.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
Like, it's still murder. But at the end of the day, you know, Yolanda's not in that same place.
No.
Number one. Number two, the biggest deal and the biggest difference between Gypsy Rose and Yolanda Saldivar is that one of them expressed fucking remorse. This bitch is making it really easy to make a case against her for having expressed no remorse for the taking of a life and not seeing where they had fault. And dude, so that is one of like the biggest things with like even getting released early.
The last 5 minutes of the documentary is when she says, yeah, it happened. The gun went off and she's dead. Like, that's it. But the fucking 3.5 hours that you watch, she's like, Abraham was threatening me. I was scared. I needed a gun.
Look, I want to say one thing really quickly on the family is that there's one niece in particular who is spotlighted. And she makes a comment early on of like, other family members didn't want her to do this, blah, blah, blah. Basically, it's not the family that's backing her up. It's like these couple people here. The rest of the family is like, nope, we don't know her. Never heard of Yolanda. Don't know her. You know,
I'm telling you, these three were
out of the picture. There were family photos. They're like, who's that? No clue.
It was so cringy, man. You sit there and you're like, what are you doing? Oh, look, it's the secret. This is it. I'm like, oh. And I'm like, oh, man, at school, people would look at me weird. And it's like, they should. Like, your tia's fucking nuts. She killed Selena. What do you want?
You know what? Like, I do have one good takeaway from this. And I'm thinking to myself, man, there should really be a big Hollywood movie about Selena and about what happened to her. And I feel like that'd be the kind of movie that could really make some careers.
Kevin Garcia.
Wait,
something no with mames. You, man.
No mames.
Déjanelo.
No mames.
Daniel, tear them apart. First of all, at the beginning of the show, you're like,
Selena, I will say, you want to get a very big understanding about Selena, personhood, and just how complicated of a person that she was. I would say read Chris's book. Read Chris Perez's book to Selena with Love. It's not that she was a bad person. At no point does this man ever talk shit about this woman. This woman is the love of his life. But it really starts to come home to you within like her in a relationship with someone other than the family that is preserving her image, that she was a complex woman and a woman who was expressing independence and identity and was right at literally the pinnacle of her 20s, about to explore more of who she was as a person outside of her family and outside of the business. That it breaks my heart reading the book, because you really feel for him, you understand what got taken from him. I would also suggest, again, you want to understand the breadth of what surrounds the Tejano culture and just overall that time period. I would read that book.
You would read what?
Oh, the Joanik Potowski book, Como la Flor. Okay. But yeah, those two are definitely like they give you a good idea. And then the other thing is Anything for Salinas, a podcast, and all of the crazy shit that happened as she was getting famous, when she passed away. And I still have beef with Howard Stern. At me, bitch. Like, maybe next time don't talk shit about Mexicans and then throw out some like bullet sounds. Maybe don't.
Yeah.
And he did that when she passed away. And guess who on national television was fighting for her ass? Linda Ronstadt. Linda Ronstadt called them bitches out for that shit and their racist crap. So yeah, like there's a lot of beef that comes and the politique that comes with it. But the last episode is with of that podcast is with Chris Bettis. This is many years after that book came out. And he talks about, you know, he talks a little bit more about some of the things he didn't talk about in the book, and just, you know, how much of a lively person that she was, but just how crazy that is when you live a life that is that fully free when you're in a certain type of lifestyle, and you know, it really becomes clear that, you know, they truly were a match for each other at the time. And we don't know what could have been, especially because it got taken. And so you see the remnants of an entire industry that, you know, just me personally, I say that the Hano music is still very much alive and well, you know, from the time of Selena, when there were only five, maybe six females that were active. Now you have 20 plus, you know, her impact is felt, maybe sometimes not in the ways that we all want in the Hano music industry, but it is felt. And I would urge everybody, fuck that hoe. Do not watch this documentary. These guys did it for y'all. But I would just say,
you don't have to.
Yeah, they watched it, so you definitely don't have to. It is a bunch of bullshit. There's nothing new in it. You want, actually, if you want a Cliff Notes version of that, you can just buy the shitty book by Maria Elena, which is a journalist from Mexico who really like went hard on all of the shit that Yolanda said, and then almost got sued by the Quintanillas, and then tried to make her own show on Televisa. So, like, trust me, they have been trying to commodify and just continue to get money off of her death for years now. And the Quintanillas have not been cool with it.
If you're 100% what you're saying. Yeah, like you said, we watched it so you didn't have to. It's a conversation because obviously it's out there, but it's not worth your time. Nothing in there is gonna change your opinion. Nothing in there is going to justify what happened. And I think
if it does change your opinion, please seek other sources as well. It is extremely one-sided.
Extremely. 100%. Like, there's 100%. No way. There's no way that you're going to sit there and go, ah. And like I said, I don't know who in their right mind sold it on who that this was the right idea. But I'm going to tell you right now, if y'all are worried, if you guys are so worried that Yolanda's going to get out, write to the parole board. If you're that fucking worried, write to the parole board. They do take public comment, by the way, just figure it out. But there is, you know, the community can vouch that this bitch should just stay in jail. But the family is also on it. They have been on it. They have been on her ass every time she tries to come out of her little solitary confinement, her little hole of solitary confinement. And so, you know, just live with the fact that, you know, if you're that passionate about it and you are that concerned, do something about it, in the sense of be active, write the parole board, figure out ways to do that. But otherwise, I'm going to be super honest with you. That woman is not getting out. And I think she's fully aware of it. So she's just trying to make money for commissary. So, you know.
Yeah. 100%.
She got to buy her cats somehow. I don't know.
Definitely. One thing I wanted to touch on was Tejano. So Tejano music, you know, music, the genre itself, right? I only knew it growing up in LA because of Selena and Johnny Canales, right? That came on TV. And that's the only time I ever heard that. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because, like you said, the genre itself is still budding. It's still booming, right? But I guess when that occurred, they literally, even the media, coaxed it as the death of Tejano music when that occurred. And now we have yourself, other performers, other singers, that are musicians that are moving this along. What, explain to me, or to people that don't know, what is Tejano music as opposed to regional or other type of Mexican derived music? What's the difference?
I mean, Tejano music, the big thing is that it is roots music created in the United States as a blend of Mexican regional and, you know, migrant sounds of polka and things that were easy to travel with. The way it started, there's always contention and debate because people go, oh, well, it started with big band. It didn't. Big band was its own genre. Latinos entering big band, you know, that was its own thing for, you know, the 60s and the 70s, a little bit in the 50s. But big band sound is completely separate because the roots of Tejano music is in conjunto. And the fact that it was stories that were told by migrants moving from town to town to town. So when we think of Mexican regional as a whole, Tejano is definitely a part of it. It's just its American cousin. It's, you know, it's literally somebody who is related because it uses all of those sounds of Mexican regional, but it has so much of the US influence of roots music, of that storytelling that, you know, was created through migrant work. So that's why when we think of Tejano music, and yeah, it's Tejano, you know, it's because it was born in Texas, but it spans throughout migrant communities. So that is all of the Southwest and into the Midwest. And so you have Colorado, Chicago, Seattle, California, Oregon, you know, all of these places where there's a lot of farming.
It's not just Texas music.
Yes. Yeah. Like a lot of the big issue is that it's called Tejano, which is the translated word for Texas. I like to tell people a lot of the times, make sure how you're using the word, because one word can mean a self-identifier. Another aspect of it is a music genre. So know how you're saying it. I think it was really funny because I had this conversation with somebody going, oh, you know, do I call your music Tejana music? I said, no, that, like, let me explain to you. And it's just, when it comes to music, I am not like, oh my God, you need to like say it this way. I'm not super I'm not a purist.
I used to be that guy where like, hey, punk is this, you know, synth is this. This is this. And you grow, you learn that everything blends, everything comes from everywhere. There's no gatekeepers to Tejano, to country, right? I mean, it shouldn't just be a white thing. Look at the Beyonce thing, right?
That was there is. Right? There's gatekeepers in every community. Yeah. It's just dependent on whether you give a fuck. And I don't.
Well, there you go. Knock them down, right? I mean, I brought it up because I want to talk about Beyonce with the country music. Yeah. You know, like. Oh.
You know what? And this is the perfect segue to Dolly Parton, who 30 minutes ago, while we were in the midst of this, of our podcastery, put out a statement in regards to Beyonce.
Ooh. Now, yeah. Would Dolly be considered an authority in country music, everybody?
Yes, she would. So. She is considered the queen of country music, and we're going to keep it that way. Thank you.
Indeed.
I'm a big fan of Beyonce and very excited that she's done a country album. So congratulations on your Billboard Hot Country number one single. Can't wait to hear the full album. Love, Dolly. Everywhere. She put that everywhere. She didn't do a press release. She just popped it into socials. The woman works on a fax. One of her poor interns or family members got a fax with that message out, said, I want it posted at this day on this time. I want it to be known to the world. Do not tell anyone. Just post it on my socials. Let them figure it out. I'm on my fax in my mountain. Peace, bitches. Bam, 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 bam. Yeah.
And... You know what? As we're talking about Selena, and everybody keeps talking about like, and I'm gonna annoy somebody very personal by saying this. People keep saying, "Could Taylor be the next Beyonce?" And all I could think of is, imagine the heights that Selena could have made. You know what I mean? And I'm glad that we have somebody like Beyonce here who is being recognized by somebody like Dolly. But when I think about all that could have been, and I think about that, I'm like, man, so much.
Yes, but I mean, we have to be realistic. Selena wasn't going to go into country. Selena was very much R&B pop.
Yeah, but it was pop R&B that I was curious about. So Tejano to pop, that's cool.
Yeah. And so like, you have to think, a lot of people kind of, this is where I say a lot of history, unfortunately, is so sieved to one person sometimes that it is almost a detriment. The case can be made for, you know, the fact that there was a lot of different people crossing over at the exact same time Selena was, or around the same time. You know, we have Freddie Fender, Linda Ronstadt, Selena, like Flaco Jimenez, the Texas Tornadoes, Michael Salgado, who was crossing over from Norteño to Tejano. So that was like a huge jump for him. He gained, like, he just went whoosh. Then we have, you know, Emilio Navaira, the history on that, you know, soon after Selena's death, he made a country record. It made number 12 on the top on the top, you know, 100 or top whatever, the Billboard 100 of country albums, and it marked the top 50 or something like that, but it hit number 12. He sold that many units of a record in the 1990s. And so I think it was 95 when he released that record. So like, so much of that history though, because we only focus on one person's crossover into, you know, R&B pop, which, mind you, that record that she released, one, the song, I think it's Dreaming of You, was the one that hit the Hot Billboard 100, and so did the album. But there was so much happening. Like, there was so much, like, the Latin explosion was happening at the time, and then it gained full force with Ricky Martin and Jennifer Lopez many years later. So, like, there was a bit of a, like, push and pull, because we're dealing with a lot of just politic about the border and a lot of politic about what is Latino, what is Mexican, and what can we accept. And so all of that to say that when we talk about the lines being blurred within music, it's been happening for ages. Nothing stays in a vacuum, because eventually it all starts sounding homogenous and the same, and it starts being difficult to enjoy. And that's why we all enjoy, like, we're polyjamorous, you know, we jam like to that. Different stuff. I could be jamming to, you know, to Meg Thee Stallion 1 minute, and then be like, si una vez dije que t-. Like, you know, pulling some shit with Selena, and then go, rata de dos patas, like with and then going to Linda Ronstadt, Blue Bayou, or, you know, to Freddie Fender, Wasted Days, like that, or, you know, oh my God.
And I love that, Patty, though, doesn't that we're
know.
There.
And I could end my day with Scotty Doesn't Know, and then just, you
some
know.
Of my favorite, like, viral stuff or like TikTok stuff is when I see like the Black community discover a dope like country singer, and they're like, oh shit, like they dig it. Or like white people end up finding like Bad Brains for the first time, and they're like, oh shit, like I love that like introduction of
I don't
music.
Know about the Bad Brains part, sir.
Love Bad Brains. You don't love Bad Brains, girl? We gotta have a conversation offline.
But here's the thing is, like, I think really white people are not tastemakers. People of color are, because we have taste and we know what seasoning is. And so because of that,
Bad Brains. Okay. Hence the Bad Brains. Definitely.
And so with that in mind, like, look, I just read you something that literally just happened, which is Dolly Parton saying, y'all need to shut up and just be cool with it. I say that Dolly has a secret that she isn't telling us on this Beyoncé record.
We're gonna have a.
But yeah. I'm gonna shut up because I don't know shit.
That'd be dope.
but in the grand scheme of things, no. Her saying that is when we talk about the things that we as people of color have to do, and I say people of color because yes, it's, you know, Latinos, Mexicanos, Indigenous, Black, Native American, like all of us people of color, you know, we have to be co-signed by somebody at some point for it to really click in some of these decision makers' heads that, okay, now we're being watched by another decision maker and we can't be fucking around. And, you know, Dolly, we have to admit at this point, like, Dolly Parton is the queen of country. She literally, she rarely ever speaks about anything. The woman very, very rarely ruffles too many feathers. And so for her to come out in support of Beyoncé is her coming in support. And I know this feels like a large leap and a jump, but is a support for a lot of people of color. They are going to see that and be like, okay, this woman does stand with people of color in the genre of country. And that sounds insane to blanket statement it, but are we wrong? Why does she need to make a bigger overarching statement for a woman that doesn't make many?
But you know what? Because she did that, that's looked at as like, oh shit, like it's sad that that's the society we're in, right? Even in
the bar is really low, I'm gonna say. She should have just
talked about writing,
she
talk about said creative, what she felt, whatever.
But the bar
there's
is
a
low.
Table which we don't have. In whatever avenue we're in, right? There's a table which we don't have a chair at. you know, sadly. But when someone at that table acknowledges us, oh, suddenly we have a seat. You know what I mean? And it sucks that we within our own community can acknowledge and recognize, oh, shit, man, this is amazing. This is great. And we can pump each other up. And it's sad that you said we have to fight tooth and nail to have a Dolly Parton come out of nowhere and say, yeah, this shit is fucking worth watching. You know, like, let's give it its due. Because in my head, after what Jay-Z said at the Grammys, you know, like, it, and I've read some stuff online, and, you know, because I read everything about music, but people are saying, oh, if Beyonce makes a record, this is going to be her record of the year, you know? But
no,
is it?
I don't think so. I think it's not going to happen because it's going to get shut down. I think it's her saying that she's going to retire. I think these next three records, I think the rollout for a lot of these records is her just expressing herself. I think Beyonce will retire. I don't think that at this point in her life, she should have to keep performing. Her discography, she owns all of it at this point. She owns a good percentage of the masters. She really doesn't have to do shit for anybody anymore. She's opening up new businesses. Of course, you know, she is not at the level of money that she is at. I will speak as a musician myself. Tours cost a lot more money a lot of the times than they give back. They sometimes are things that cost more than they're worth. And so, you know, yes, Beyonce has a lot of money, but is she going to keep touring every record for the rest of her life? Nah, I don't see that. I see this as being an extension of what she was exploring in Lemonade and the different music genres that we heard from her. This is not the first country song she's done. And I would like to say everybody that this is also not the first time that country artists have covered and done country versions of her song. Mickey Guyton and Reba McEntire did country versions of If I Were a Boy, the song that came out on Beyonce's record years ago. If anyone remembers that really wild fucking music video and just that, number one.
What I think is Beyonce's, and that's just not, maybe it's being vulgar about it, but it's Johnny Cash's middle finger to everybody. Like, hey, you know what? Fuck you guys. I'm doing what I want. This is me. And this is it. It's just a dropping the mic moment for her as well. Like you said, that's what I think this is.
One of the best headlines I saw in the news was Beyonce reclaims country music. It wasn't Beyonce enters country music or reclaims is an important word.
That's true.
I'm talking about the history of music.
I will say that it's a bit, as a historian, it creates some problems.
Fair enough.
Because we then run into the issue of overshadowing the people that came before Beyonce. Linda Martell, Charlie Pride, you know, some of these people that had to, that were struggling, that were grinding, and that people didn't realize that the first woman to be on the Billboard, you know, charts was Linda Martell, but that the industry was very different from the industry of now. The industry of then was one that required, that actually segregated many of the times country music. And if, and the music made by people who were people of color, you know, Black, Tejano, you know, in the sense of Mexican, Freddie Fender's most famous album was released as a Tejano record, not as a country record, but made the number one on the Billboard Hot 100. So explain that one to me. Like country is segregated.
Right. If you want to learn more
about it, I would recommend listening to Cocaine and Rhinestones.
When I'm asking you this as a historian, when I say that I think reclaims is an important phrase, I'm not saying, like you said, ignoring the people that came before. I think the impetus here is what you were saying earlier, where Dolly Parton shouldn't have to come out to her defense. Like, that shouldn't be needed. And yet in today's country industry, there needs to be a reminder of, hey, there was something that came before and was there throughout, but they like to pretend that for the past 20 years, it didn't exist.
Not just that, but especially around 9/11,
that's why I say the past 20
years. Country music definitely took on a more nationalist tone, mm-hmm. in the sense of, you know, we're American, rawr. We drink Bud Light and we kick people in the ass and take my gun.
Freedom, like, fries and all that shit.
Yeah, free, all that exactly. shit was yeah. very prevalent.
That's what I mean. Away. Because for the past 20 years, it's been a big, as somebody who's not involved in country or the music industry, it appears to me that there's been a big push to kind of ignore or minimize the idea of people of color in the country industry.
Oh yeah, but it's gone so far that like the moment that they took, and I say they take, and I mean it in more than one level, you know, the country music industry has made a point to take sounds from people of color, change them so that it fits their very bland version of what that is, and then sell it. But will you ever see a person of color with that same sound? Well, one, no, because it won't sound like ass. And number two, it won't sound like reaching for the bottom of the barrel, which means doing the bare minimum. And number three, because there is a very clear sense of who you are is not truly accepted in town many times. I have been very blessed, on the other hand, to, you know, walk tall and carry a big stick. And I don't really give a shit because I come from Brownsville. Why am I going to care what you think of me? Like, you know, bro, I'm in the most southern tip of the United States.
What I take from Kevin's statement is the fact that people tend to forget, like you said, right, where the culture came from. It's not a white culture thing. And I think that's where I take away from it, because when I look at history and I read things and I go back and I dig, right, because I just consume it. When you see how the cowboy way, quote unquote, came about, it wasn't just from white guys running around the U.S. northern states.
It came from Mexicans.
Exactly. And I think that's where it said, like,
black cowboys and indigenous cowboys. That's where it came from.
Yeah. And that's what I think I take from that statement, what Kevin said. It's like, like, it's not like, oh, she's coming in brand new. Like, oh, we're taking it back. Like, let's acknowledge this shit, right? You know, like, it's not a white thing. And I think that that's the overlying cloud above this, right? Like, and I grew up that way. I grew up in L.A., inner city music and Latino music all day. I'm Salvadoreño, so merengue and cumbia is all I heard. But when I heard the CMT awards are on, changed the fucking channel because it's not for me. You know what I mean? But at this point, you know, I'm glad that we're growing. The community is growing. The Tejano community is growing. I'm learning about it more and more, you know, and the Latinos and black performers are expanding to where they're just breaking down barriers and those stupid gates that we talk about, right? When it comes to music, when it comes to comic books, to movies, to TV, whatever we want to do, we're breaking those barriers. And I'm just loving that this community is growing. And I think that, you know, people like you, Veronique, like Kevin Garcia, like you so gushed about the Kevin Garcias out there, because there's more than one, but this one that
we all have a Kevin in our life.
You know what? Hold on a second. I wanted to say something a minute ago when Veronique was talking about coming in with a big stick and you're talking about growing. All I can think of is when I think about her career, I think about like a dragon just growing up out of somebody and becoming this great dragon, a hero for everyone to follow. And that's why I'm glad that if anybody's going to be writing a book about that, that is you.
The dragon.
Well, I think the biggest kind of takeaway, at least for me, that really wraps up, you know, having to have the cosign. I'm fully aware of it. A lot of us are. But the fact that that even happened is huge. It's huge for everyone. It's huge for people of color. Yeah, she aims it at Beyonce, but it is definitely something that is supposed to, when Dolly speaks, it is speaking with subtext, because the woman is not going to just outright say a bunch of shit. It's just not in her nature. She's built very differently in regards to how she deals with the media. But I think Taylor Crumpton wrote it best for Time Magazine. When they, you know, and she is a music, pop culture, and politics writer. And this is the direct quote from her article about Beyonce coming into country music. And it gets me very emotional. So thankfully, I've read it more than once, so I don't get as emotional now. But I hope this moves you. The truth is that country music has never been white. Country music is black. Country music is Mexican. Country music is indigenous. And I want to leave you guys with that in regards to country music and whether you see yourself in it. because that should really encompass. If you ever felt like there was a part of it that spoke to you and you felt bad about it, don't, because it was taken from sounds that remind you of your family, of your friends, of your gatherings, of, you know, our music. And so when I say our music, I talk about mine, which is Tejano, which is Mexican. It's the sounds of Mexico. You know, when it comes to, you know, Black people, it is their music. It is the, you know, Rosetta Tharpe and Linda Martell and Charlie Prides and the sounds that came from a Black community, from the rock and roll that was created and the roots music that was created from bluegrass and folk. All these things came from Black, I mean, my God, Zydeco, all of those sounds came from Black communities. And so, you know, each of us has a role to play in the overall community that is country. It's just now we're fighting for our place. And so if anyone ever tells you, why do you want a seat at a table where you're not wanted? I just say, pull a Michael Jordan and just use that. You know, Michael Jordan did, if you guys have not seen the documentary, The Last Dance, you should. There's a lot of recommendations on this podcast, yeah. A lot of different things. So I'll make a list. Hey,
there's always good recommendations on this podcast. Everybody should listen to this podcast.
Always. Every day.
And The Last Dance is an amazing documentary. If you want to understand how to really train your brain to use negative like reactions to best fuel a more productive mind, just look at Michael Jordan. My God, the man went through it to get through it. And he really came out on the other side. I mean, look at him now. Like you really can't deny the sauce, man. There's nobody
can argue. Like,
You really can't argue it. And so, you know, I hope I leave you with that in regards to country music, that a lot of us are here. A lot of us are fighting for a place to speak, to stay, to really make our own. And you are welcome, you know, with us, with people of color, with us, you know, here.
Definitely. I really want to just thank you, Veronique. I mean, we could talk for hours, like you said, and I'm opening the door for you. Please, anytime you want to come on and chat, please feel free. We didn't get into any geekdom and all your comic knowledge, which I know you love to flex.
We did get into geekdom. We got into music geekdom. We got into history.
No, but we didn't get into the stuff off camera because we were just so excited to start. We're so excited.
That's behind the scenes.
That's behind the curtain. Look, if you guys want me back, you guys just need to put in the comments of what did you think of this episode, that you actually liked it. That's what you need to put.
Make sure you want more. Veronique, come back. Question mark.
By the way, you guys, some big events that I will be at coming up really soon is BIPOC Fest in Austin. It will be the first week of March. I will be
BIPOC Pop?
Yes, BIPOC Pop.
Yes,
BIPOC Pop, yeah.
Yes, at the beginning of March. And then I
7th, 8th, and 9th, by the way.
7th, thank you. 7th, 8th, and 9th of March. Just, you know what, just have my mouth move and then just have you all say.
I'll dub you.
The Primos will be there too. All of us will be there.
The Primos will be there too, Veronique. We can do it live. 7, 8, and 9. There you go. Perfect.
I spoke with no teeth. Like, what the fuck was up with me? I was like. but the other thing is, I will be at USC, University of Southern California, the sounds of the Rio Grande Valley, for a panel at USC, the University of Southern California, March the 22nd. So please make sure to head out. Then my book, 13 Origins Dragon Thrall, hits comic book stores March the 15th, I think. Because I don't understand how books work. So,
the Ides of March.
That's,
by the way, the same day that my Kickstarter ends, actually.
Yes. So go and support your creators, i.e. Kevin and myself. Mm-hmm. All of us are out here.
And Freddie.
Freddie disappeared, but he's here in spirit. And so please make sure to support everybody. And thank you guys so much. Thank you to all the primos. You guys have a new prima, la loca, la divina, Veronique Medrano. Gracias.
Muchísimas Veronique, gracias. No, you're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you for joining us tonight. And of course, please check her out at Veronique956. And of course, check out Mr. Kevin Garcia _.com. And check out worldswarcomics.com as well. Campaign is still live, guys.
Yeah, go the out Kickstarter, there. We're about 40-45% right now. So doing good. That's as of recording. And looking forward to that. I really want to make this happen. It's an indie book. We want to have more indie creators. Please support the arts. And what I think I can tell people is, like, if you can't financially support it right now, share it with somebody else who might.
Yeah. Just put it out there, Primo. That's what we're all about, man. No matter where you're from, if you're from the deep south of Texas, the central of Texas, or all over the world, remember, we're all primos. Let's take care of each other. Let's support each other. And remember, country music is for everybody. Give it a shot.
Woo! Puro amor, puro besos, puro primos. What?